Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's good, everyone? I am Winston A. Marshall, aka the Swaggy Blurred, here with my co-host and engineer extraordinaire, as always, Mr. Dwayne Burke, Mr. Burke made himself. We are super happy to be here yet again and talk about the new series that finally dropped, What If? Now, this has been the last major show outside of Hawkeye that people have kind of been waiting for from Disney Plus, from the MCU. And this is following the Watcher telling stories of essentially variant timelines. Of what if, you know, instead of Steve Rogers becoming Captain America, if Peggy Carter became the Super Soldier and in turn became Captain Carter, which we're going to jump right into it. This part of the episode is going to be a spoiler review. We're not going to talk about it for super long, probably like a good 10 or 15 minutes just to, you know, sound off on what we feel about the new series and the episode. But then we're going to swing back around to some other comic book and movie and nerdy TV news, all that good stuff. So definitely come back on through once this part is over. So Dwayne, initial thoughts on What If, man?
I honestly really enjoyed it. I had a feeling that What If was not going to be exactly what, you know, we thought it was going to be when we initially heard about the concept. Once we got to the Loki finale and we basically got the start of the multiverse, I was like, oh, well, it makes sense that What If is next, because it's going to help anyone who was like slightly confused about what was going on at the end of Loki. Like, I think this will very solidify, you know, where the universe is now. But one of the things that I immediately loved about the show was the animation style. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you watch Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix. But yes, that's one of my favorite shows because of the way it plays with animation and has like all those different animation variations. And I really like the animation style of this episode. I don't know if everyone is going to be different. I kind of hope that everyone is different, but that might maybe be too much to ask given what they're already doing with the show. But if everyone is different, I think that would be super cool. But so far, so good. I'm really liking it. I really liked the themes of this episode. I thought it was a little telling that they made sure to not call Captain Carter Captain Britain.
Right.
Like, I thought that was a very interesting. Like, they like made sure to not make that designation. I was like, that was very interesting.
He wasn't Iron Man. He was Hydra Stomper or Hydra Smasher? Hydra Stomper?
I can't remember. I watched this very late last night.
Fair. Hydra Stomper. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that it was very interesting to like make sure that they differentiated things that would have been in the sacred timeline,
right?
For lack of a better term, I guess at this point. But I know you were talking about some of the things you thought about it. How'd you feel?
Yeah, I genuinely enjoyed it. I thought it would have been interesting since we had a similar situation on the train, thinking that Steve got captured. I was like, oh crap, we're about to get a Steve Winter Soldier. That actually sounds dope as hell. Like, I'm curious to see where that's going. That's obviously not what happened. My only beef, and I wouldn't necessarily call it a beef, but I guess my criticism of What If so far is just the pacing. For me, I obviously know, for as many times as I've watched the MCU, let alone been a fan of comics and all that, I know the story of Captain America. There's certain shortcuts you can take because the idea is that you were already well-versed before you come into this. But for me, I would have preferred the pacing. Like if it was a Love, Death, and Robots, you brought that up, for example, those tend to not be longer than 10 or 15 minutes. And a lot of that has to do with, it's a very self-contained, here's an element we're introducing you to, it plays itself out, we move on. Since this is ultimately tied to so much other stuff, I would have almost preferred a Black Mirror approach to the anthology, where give me like a short film, give me like a good hour or an hour and a half to sit in this and to really just appreciate everything that's going on, versus trying to get it to me. And essentially, I want to say, like, if you include the credits, I think this is about 28 minutes. And so it just felt, for me, a little bit rushed, especially like you had nods to moments like, oh, you were going to be on the USO show, but I got you a better looking like costume and stuff, or the train situation or things like that. Now, mind you, my feelings might change a little bit watching it again. I just felt that we were moving at a pace that I couldn't truly take in and absorb what it means for Peggy to take the mantle, to be the one that invented that mantle, what it means for Steve to, again, be so determined he still found another way to get into the fray and be who he is. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's the only major criticism I have, but I love the fact that we got, since, you know, the Red Skull wasn't able to get it and develop whatever said technologies, that he really was just working on the portal to bring in a monster. The fact that Howard ended up being the one inventing an Iron Man suit instead of his son, you know, based off of how this all played out and having the Tesseract. I think that there was a lot of really cool threads that I'm seeing unfold. And what you mentioned before, if this is the case, I think helps a little bit. You did tease already that the Avengers are coming, but with Captain Carter there instead of Captain America, instead of Steve. So I am curious if they're going to reintroduce Peggy in another What If episode. But if not, I just hate that we got such little time to spend with her and to really digest all of this, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, I can agree with that kind of, but I also kind of think about it the way, kind of the way I feel about Spider-Man and even Batman at this point. Like if I see those damn pearls fall to the ground one more time, like I'm over it. I don't need, there's parts of the story that I just don't need anymore.
Sure.
Like there's a reason, like, we haven't really seen, you know, the Uncle Ben getting killed again, because it's like, at this point, like, we don't need it. we have seen it so many times that like I think everyone is well-versed. I'm, to be completely honest, I think we could have picked up Captain Carter like at the end and gone from there, and I think we would have been completely fine, because everyone knows the story of Captain America well enough that they could have pieced together how that went.
Well, like, for example, I think one of the things that I appreciated is Steve dealt with his idea of, like, you're an experiment, it's not real, you can go on this USO show, whatever. Peggy's dealing with something, in my opinion, that's a little bit more ingrained in the times and a little bit more insidious, in that it's like, you're a woman. This was a waste of an experiment. I would have liked to have watched that unravel a little bit more. I'm glad we got some sort of conclusion where the dude all of a sudden was like, it was always my idea, it was great, right? La, 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 la. And I'm like, okay, you tool, like, whatever.
Yeah. But
I would have loved to explore that more. If we're going to actually dive into something like that, then let's dive into it, you know?
I think that, and this is me, just, this is pure conjecture, but
yeah,
if they do this the right way, and if they have the right people working on this, then they can't really have kind of closed the book on that, because when Peggy comes into modern times, that's still something she's going to be dealing with.
Absolutely.
So I think maybe that's why, like, they didn't close the book on that, because I think that might be something that they're going to address if we do get that not next episode, but another episode with Captain Carter leading the Avengers. Right. And I think that we might have some of that play into it as well.
I digress a little bit in the fact that I think that the idea may be the standard that she set back in the World War may have actually eliminated a lot of that sexism over the course of the next 70 years, though, because it would be women, like it was like, you're a field agent, you're a woman, you can't be on the front line, all that kind of stuff. After watching her do what she did, there may be a completely different mentality over the last 70 years where people are actually like, nah, women are the ish. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that too, honestly, if we do get more of her. So hopefully we get more. If you had to give it a rating real quick, Dwayne, what would you give it out of 5, man?
You know, I'll err on the higher side. I'll give it a 4, but it's like a,
okay,
like,
yeah,
like I'll give it's, I'm mean, not, it's not a convincing 4. And, yeah, and to be fair, it is the first episode. Normally on most shows, I feel the weakest about the pilot, you know, especially looking back. But I just, I agree with you. There's just more they could have done.
Right.
And I think that while this was it is a risk, and it was a very adventurous show, I think they did play it safe in the wrong areas.
I agree. For that reason, I would probably give it a 3. Again, the pacing was a little off for me. I agree with the idea of like maybe it being a little too safe in certain areas. Wanting to just have more time to explore this. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, I think about Black Mirror. I know they do a lot of callbacks to stuff in later episodes. But if we're going to consider this a what if self-contained story, let me feel the story is fully complete. Don't, because what the greatest way I can describe this felt like the most polished, beautifully executed PowerPoint I've ever seen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where like it is so thoroughly done and presented, but it was a PowerPoint. This wasn't like a full blown presentation, if that makes sense. And that, I'm not saying that like the animation wasn't there, but you hit me with bullet points. That's essentially what I mean by that.
I also think the Watcher wasn't explored enough.
Right.
Like I think for anyone who's not familiar with who that character is, like that's going to be like a real like, yo, what, exactly. Who is this person that's narrating? Like, so I think some people might be confused. And while yes, the Watcher is like the voice of the audience kind of, but like that's not the intention of the character. And I think that might confuse some people just because like they didn't really give a explanation of who the Watcher is or who the Watchers are. So I think that kind of could have been, you know, because I think in actuality it's about 30 minutes long without credits.
I think it's closer to 28 because they do the same thing that they, because it reads 33 something. So they do the same thing.
Okay.
They run their credits and then they run like the foreign credits. So it tends to be about,
I thought it was like 48 or 42 or something like that. Maybe I saw it wrong. I can
double check.
It's not a big deal because I also think that it was too short. It needed a little bit of time kind of maybe explaining like the Watchers a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But maybe we'll get that because like if every single one starts with that same voiceover and ends with that same voiceover kind of, or like a variation of it, like no one's going to really understand what the Watchers are and who the Watcher is, you know?
Okay, so let's see. It was the credits start at 29 and the whole thing was 34.
Yeah.
So and like Peggy's stuff is done and the Watcher starts talking about himself at 28 and a half.
Yeah, and
so,
there's
you
like
know what I'm saying.
I think the first like 2 minutes of that isn't show either.
Right.
But I think that there it could have been a like if they had given us like 45 of actual like show.
Yeah, maybe exactly.
I think we could have gotten, we could have covered everything a little bit more thoroughly. It felt kind of like a you know those like watercolors that you buy that are like kind of like not paint by numbers, but they're like,
yeah.
They're kind of like, hey, here's the general shapes, and then you can kind of change the colors and do whatever you want with it. Like, that's kind of what it felt like. It wasn't quite a, you know, Van Gogh painting on his own, like someone really getting fully into it. But
yeah, no, I feel you. I feel you. So
we've got another story. It's about What If, and apparently that there was a comic that was too dark for the Disney Plus show. They had planned an episode involving a mutated Spider-Man that was rejected for being too disturbing. And you know what? I kind of get it, you know. At the end of the day, the one thing people have to remember is these are for kids. Like they're not making these for adults, really, you know. So like, I don't know if we want to scare the crap out of kids with like, because I could think about like when you watch I don't know if you've seen like the Batman or like Brave and the Bold with Man-Bat. Sometimes that stuff gets real weird.
Man-Bat does get a little weird. I agree with you. So here was my thing. The only reason I don't agree with this in particular is you don't need to go as deep as the What If, because I'm looking at the comic book cover for that, and that is pretty gruesome and terrifying, right? But if you remember the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, they actually did like a short series in the middle of the whole Morbius situation where you had Spider-Man's mutation was getting out of control. And so first he pops extra arms and then he kind of does turn into this weird human spider. But like, I forgot about that as a kid. I was like, oh no, Spider-Man. Like you can find a way to do it without making it like full-blown horror like that. You know what I'm saying? Where it can still be scary, but it doesn't have to be ridiculous.
I mean, maybe this is what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And the real reason they rejected it is because of like the events that happen in that storyline. Sure. If they were using that story arc as a basis of the episode, because in that story arc, Peter is a mutant and he ends up at the Xavier Institute
trying to, how can you help me?
Yeah. Which means that we would have to have introduced mutants, which we haven't done yet.
Fair.
So I think maybe that's why they were like, Hey, maybe like in season two or season three, after we've, you know, rolled this out. 'Cause like, I do think that you're right. There is a way to do it that's a little bit less gruesome.
Because to that point, Feige and the Marvel Studios has already done that before, where you took a serious topic that was really explored in the comics and you did a light homage to it. So for example, there is a very dark storyline in the comics about Tony Stark dealing with his alcoholism.
Yeah,
and you got a light touching of it in Iron Man 2, which I appreciate. I do wish maybe we were able to explore it more if it was because in the same way he was kind of self-medicating. So this idea that he's dying and he can't really do anything about it, so he drinks to cope. I think that would have been really interesting to really dive into, but at least we sort of explored it somewhat, which culminated in that, you know, the fight at his birthday with Rhodey. You know what I'm saying? So I know that they can handle topics that are touchy. You did it with the grief with WandaVision. You did it with the racism in Falcon and Winter Soldier. You've proven to us that that's something you can handle. So I don't think that there's a way that they can't find a way to I mean, because think about it, we're about to get the Multiverse of Madness, and we've been warned multiple times it's a horror movie. So
yeah, I think that maybe, and this is just kind of me thinking, you know, putting on my if I was and executive or a creative like kind of hat, and thinking about What If kind of like kids in the sandbox playing with their action figures.
Yes,
you know, and I don't think any kid would go like, hey, what if I like turned Spider-Man into a spider, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah. I think when a kid is watching What If, they're going to see it as like, hey, this is what I would do with my action figures if I was coming up with the stories on my own kind of. And I think that like, and I'm honestly, I'm just putting on my like, hey, if I was hearing this pitch and I was like, hey, how can we make this interesting for kids? I was like, well, this is the vibe I would want the show to have,
right?
You know? And I think maybe that doesn't quite fit the vibe of the show that they want the show to have. I might be totally wrong because they might have some like super, you know, super adult themes in some of the other episodes. I don't know what the other episodes are going to be outside of, you know, like the T'Challa as Star-Lord episode and like things like that. Like, because I only saw that first trailer and did not watch anything else about the show because I didn't want to know anything else.
Yeah. No, for sure, man. I feel that 1,000%. So, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see where they go from there. But let's jump over. We'll come back to some Marvel news in a minute. Let's jump over to probably the biggest story in comics and on all and geeky stuff that happened in the last 24 hours, man. We had a major character defining moment in the Bat family.
Yeah. So, and I'm not going to put an actual label on the character. I'm just reading the headline as it was reported. But Tim Drake, also known as Robin, has come out as a bisexual in the comics. It's not the label I would ascribe to it, because reading it and seeing it, I would 100% say that he's just exploring his sexuality. He has not labeled himself, which I think is a very important step on that journey, as a member of the queer community. Like, it's how you see yourself is very important, and other people's labels of you are not important. Yeah. Like, to just be, and you have to kind of come to that realization on your own that it's very much of a you and how you see yourself, how you want to present yourself to the world, and how you identify. So I would say until we have the character identify themselves, I wouldn't ascribe that label. I would just say they are exploring, which I think is fantastic, because I think it's one of those steps that needs to kind of be taken to mirror comics to the real world. I think that's been one of my biggest issues with kind of movies as a whole, but comic book movies and comics kind of as a whole, and even comics in general for a very long time, they don't mirror the real world. You know, we don't have all of the different facets and colors and shapes and sizes that exist.
I agree. I think it a lot of times becomes a little too black and white. And that's, like you said, that's not how it happens. And I think there's a couple things that stood out to me about this whole thing. I mean, the first, the idea of how it's being described even in the book itself, of it being a light bulb moment, you know, and him something starting to like realize. I think a lot of people in the queer community identified with that, being like, yeah, okay, that was, I love that element. But I think the thing that sticks out to me the most was a quote from Megan Fitzmartin. She's the writer on this run of Batman Urban Legends. And she was quoted she was interviewed by Polygon, and she was quoted saying, I wanted to pay tribute to the fact that sexuality is a journey. To be clear, his feelings for Stephanie, who was a Robin herself that he had a romantic relationship with, his feelings for Stephanie have been and are 100% real, as are his feelings for Bernard, who is the young man that he is saving and then has this feeling for in Urban Legend 6. However, Tim is still figuring himself out. I don't think he has the language for all of it yet. And I think that is so key to this entire thing. And I think as you were talking about, and how a lot of queer people have been talking about this, it is a journey. It's a discovery. It's the idea that, you know, a lot of queer people have been very succinct about, that, you know, with sexuality being fluid, it's a situation where it could be he just likes Bernard and then he never has feelings for another man. It could be that he finds out that he really is gay. It could be that he's bi, could be pan. There's an infinite number of ways that this could play out and how his feelings could evolve and how his sexuality could evolve. I appreciate that this isn't just being like, and there he is, he's gay. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were like, no, we're taking this with care and how, like you said, it happens in the real world. It takes time to figure out exactly who you are and what things mean to you. So I love it. I love it in that regard. And like, a lot of people were like, well, how is it that like he didn't know this for 30 years? Well, as a lot of people in the queer community will tell you, some people know at 5. Some people find out at 45. It really just depends on so many factors.
Like the way you described it. Like, that's like asking like, hey, why weren't the lights on when I got home? Like, because they're not on until you turn them on. Like, you don't know until you know, until you have like some experience or something that makes you kind of start walking down that path. Like, you don't,
right?
It's like, yeah, it's not as simple as like you just know. That's not how it works.
Yeah,
but
exactly, man. Exactly. All right. Well, let's hop into our other big story from the weekend. The Suicide Squad finally released on HBO Max and in theaters. And it has been loved by many, but the box office numbers don't necessarily reflect that. Dwayne, what was going on with the box office of Suicide Squad?
Yeah. So despite all the different plans and release strategies that DC had for the Suicide Squad, they only generated, hold on, let me get the $72.2 million. $72.2 million overall for the opening weekend. It earned 26.5 in the first 3 days in North America. Comparing that to F9, which earned 70, A Quiet Place Part 2, 48. And Black Widow 80, it kind of seems like it underperformed, but I would say that I think there are a lot of things going not against the Suicide Squad, but I think a lot of people aren't
helping it. I agree.
Yeah, I think a lot of people aren't taking into consideration. I honestly think that having it come out to 72.2, which is, you know, when you think about the difference in percentage to like Black Widow, I think that's actually really respectable. I think that was actually a really good opening, considering now that we have the Delta variant running rampant. On top of, while Black Widow made $80 million. I do believe that $80 million does take into account the Disney premium or plus or whatever premium access, it's called. Yes. Something that does not exist for the Suicide Squad. So if you take the number of people that watched it on HBO Max and then multiply that by 30, I think the Suicide Squad probably made more money than Black Widow did. And I don't think that necessarily not having a premium access version or model or whatever is the wrong way to go about it, honestly, because if you look at it, they almost made $80 million without it.
Yeah.
You know, and think about how many people didn't watch it on the big screen then and watched it at home, which I watched it at home. Not gonna lie, because I watched it, you know, the second it dropped on HBO Max. And I'm not one of the people that loved it. I really did enjoy it. I think it was a very good film. It's still not my favorite. I think it is in my top three of DC EU films.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in what continuity at this point with DC.
It's still part of it. They're counting it. And I agree with you. I wasn't one of those people that was like, this is my favorite superhero movie. I'm not there. There's plenty of others that I enjoy more, but I really enjoyed this film a lot. I think I was a little tainted and I will rewatch it on HBO Max. Part of it for me is this might be the beginning of me for a while being done with theaters if there are streaming options, because I went because I love seeing an IMAX or Dolby if that's an option. I went and I was there with some little kid, like there were some 15-year-olds talking the whole time. I had to tell them to shut up like 3 or 4 times. And so that did put a little bit of a stank on it for me, I'll admit. So that's kind of pushing things. But I agree. I think the Delta variant rising up had a lot to do with it. I think the fact that it's rated R, we have noticed in Deadpool movies, for example, that you can't have a rated R comic book film or Logan and still do well. But let's also not forget, again, those were not during a pandemic. So that changes it, as well as the splitting of the difference between HBO Max and the theater. So I know that those all played elements into it. But I will say, at the very least, just from a review standpoint, and we're not going to do like a full spoiler review or anything on that, I do think that it was a very well done movie and shows that there's a reason why James Gunn is the go-to guy for misfit superheroes. Like, he has kind of mastered the misfit superhero genre. I'd be curious to see him behind the helm of an Avengers. I don't think that that's really necessarily his forte, because it's a little too clean cut in that regard. But, you know, the fact that they did, it was like well known with the MCU that they allowed the directors of each of those various franchises to have input for Infinity War and Endgame on how to deal with those characters. I thought that was a really cool element that they had in that. I do think that if given the opportunity, he could potentially do something really cool with a kind of a mix up like that. But I was very thoroughly impressed. And I definitely can't wait to watch it again. All right, so I only want to get a couple more stories because I don't want to keep everybody and all that kind of stuff. But let's talk about real quick about Tom Hardy really pushing for a Venom Spider-Man connection going forward.
Yeah. So he on and you know what, I think we can kind of roll the two stories that we have for Tom Hardy together. So Tom Hardy is. He's saying he's trying to wait. Hold on. Is he trying? Yeah. He said it would be kind of ill-advised if he wasn't trying to steer any connectivity. Which I mean, yeah. Who doesn't want to keep themselves employed? honestly, like that's honestly, that's pretty much the gist of what he said. He's like, you know, it's like, if I wasn't trying to do that, like, I'd be talking myself out of a job, basically. But he also kind of gave mixed messages on a third Venom. Right. And he said that a third would not be greenlit until a second is successful, but that the studio was really pleased with the second, which. Okay. Look, I got to take that with a grain of salt, because I don't think anyone is going to say, hey, like, I really don't like this movie that we made.
Yeah. Right,
you know, right. And I've only seen the initial trailer for this as well. I haven't seen the one that was released like, what, 2 weeks ago? I think it was.
Yeah.
I didn't
more focused on Carnage. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't watch it.
Okay.
But what I've heard about it wasn't encouraging. But I do like, I would like to see Venom and Spider-Man connect, but I think that with the steps that we've kind of taken in the MCU, I think were taken in order to allow Sony to do that without it affecting the MCU.
I agree.
I
agree with you.
I think that we are going to see coming in the next, you know, couple of years, that all of that is going to be an alternate timeline.
Considering this was a move, in my opinion, by Feige also trying to work with Sony to allow for you're essentially hitting three birds with one stone. You found a way to let Sony continue to play how they want to play, and like setting up a deal that works with Spider-Man staying within the MCU, but Spider-Man can also be in Sony. You found a way to potentially, again, you had to bring the Fantastic Four in, the X-Men, all these other elements that you were about to deal with as is, and you've you essentially, by doing all of that simultaneously, it might be two. I was thinking three birds, but I may have combined two of my thoughts. My point is, you have effectively, oh, and the last one is exploring a whole new element of Marvel that is very succinct to this multiverse. That's a big deal, and allowing for storylines outside of the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and outside of Spider-Man to also blossom. So you literally were able to do three things at once, give us a major big bad in Kang that now our main heroes have to deal with, but then finding a way to play well with Sony and keep Spider-Man. I think it's pretty brilliant on their part to have done this. So I'm here for it. I hope that this new Venom is good. I saw that new trailer and I'm impressed by Woody Harrelson. I always have been. I thought he's been a very good actor. And so I think what he's giving us to Carnage should be good. But I think it is a time will tell. I know I'm one of the few people that enjoyed Venom. I know a lot of people did not.
I think I liked it more than most, actually. I actually did kind of enjoy. Yes, it's not like the classic Venom that I think a lot of people wanted, but I think if they take this second film into more of the like buddy comedy, like kind of vibe, I think that'll give us it's because that's kind of where I think the first movie struggles is there was like they mixed a few too many genres when they were mixing up the potions. And I think if they go a little bit more clear cut with a little bit clearer direction on this one, I think it'll be good.
No, I agree. I agree with you. All right. Well, I want to cover one more story and then we both got to get out of here. James Gunn has been teasing that there's going to be a lot more MCU deaths coming in Guardians 3. What are we seeing about this, Dwayne?
Yeah. So he was discussing the Suicide Squad, but he also, in that interview with Entertainment Tonight, he dropped some hints about the final film in his Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy and said that it's going to include some deaths. Let's see. I want to get to the exact quote. Okay, so he said that the Suicide Squad is different from Guardians because they're more vicious. Guardians has a family feel or family film element to it. So when Rocket says to Drax, "I'm going to shoot you in the face and kill you," you don't think that he's going to, you know, do it in the movie. And then he pointed out that he's obviously killed.
What, like Big Groot and Yondu?
He's killed characters before, but this won't be the same. And we know that most of them are gonna make it alive, but some people that are gonna
for two movies. Yeah.
And we know that. Okay, I think he kind of hinted. Yeah, this quote kind of makes it feel like he's hinting at Drax is going to be the one that bites it.
Goes.
Yeah, saying that this is his last Guardians movie and him and Dave are pretty much attached at the hip and he doesn't see him going on. If he's like if they're not going on together, they're not going on with the franchise, which is interesting. I mean, it's very well known that Dave Bautista has kind of said that he's not coming back post Guardians 3 for Drax. Him saying that it's due to his age, he's just getting too old for it to, you know, kind of quote Danny Glover. It's fair conjecture that Drax is going to be the character that dies. I also think that it is fully fair conjecture that someone was going to die. Someone important has died in every single film. So it's not like this is something new. It's something that, you know, James Gunn kind of has done and kind of set us up for. So I'm not surprised at all that someone's going to die.
I agree with you. This is a through line that we've had every time, and it's one that's like tugged at our heartstrings. And I agree, the difference with the Suicide Squad and this is they are all set up to anybody can die for any reason at any point, right? Versus with Guardians, the idea is that for the most part, they are going to stay with it. You know what I mean? They will keep the core group there. But again, we've lost Gamora. I know that a lot of this is Avengers related. We've lost Gamora. We've lost a version of Nebula. You know, there is a sort of element of anything can really happen, especially when you consider how big the roster is of the Guardians in the actual lexicon. You have so many other Guardians characters you can pull from, including Earthbound heroes that become members of the Guardians at one point or another. I mean, the fact that Thor is rolling with them right now and they're the Asgardians of the galaxy, you know what I mean? Like that also adds to it too. I know that's Asgard and not Earth, but you get it. So I'm really curious to see his final touches on this, man, and really see how he handles it. And I wouldn't hate a Drax death. I mean, I love Drax as a character, but like you said, Batista's like, dude, I'm pushing like late 50s. Yeah. I don't want to keep, like, I love the character and I pitched it. We talked about this. I pitched a show and they didn't really seem interested. So I'm cool to be done and like move on. You know what I mean? And I respect it. I respect giving us a succinct story and leaving on your own terms.
Absolutely.
With that, y'all, we got to get out of here. Dwayne, tell them where they can find you, man.
You can find me anywhere and everywhere on the internet at Burke Mays, YouTube, Twitch, when I have time. And do me a really big favor, go check out the FCL on the Schmodown Twitch channel. Like, we're having so much fun over there. I'm so proud of what we're bringing to the table there for live broadcasts and how we're able to put that together. It's not just a one-man show over there. We have a whole great team, JP, PLD, Brad, Steph, everybody bringing everything to the table, bringing their A game every week. And please go check it out because it really is a lot of fun.
Hey, for sure. Please do that. Go check out Burke Bade, man. Dwayne has been killing it with all of his shows, man. And we want to support him as much as possible. And you can find me at the Swaggy Blur. That's on all socials. You can find me at Blurreds in the Hood Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific. You can also find me hosting the Citizen app. If you're trying to figure out how to stay safe and whatnot, I am one of the co-hosts on there. There multiple days a week. I'll be there today. As we speak, you probably finish this and then open up Citizen. I'm probably telling you about a fire in your neighborhood. So, all that good stuff. We appreciate y'all rocking with us. Continue to rock with us. We'll do some more What If next week and some other stories. But you take care, everybody. We will see y'all next time. Be easy.